Good evening. Thank you and welcome everybody. Hi, Taryn. How are you?
Hi. Hello. Hello.
The joys of being in the warmth of the Caribbean, I guess. But we had a warm day today, so I'm not...
The joys of being in the warmth, traffic-ridden.
Oh, yes. Right. You know, I sat in traffic for a couple hours today because I was traveling back from Long Island. And it took me a while. Waze actually brought me through, you know, some places that I had never driven before. So that was really, really crazy. I thought I should have been back here by 2:30 this afternoon. And I got here like about 3:15. So, but there was a lot of construction, you know, New York, there's always construction.
And let me, apparently I'm in East New York because construction was the good of the day today. On both ends,
right.
And coming back. And let me apologize at the beginning to say that I am addicted. I am a recovering coffee addict. I'm having coffee. So apologies for those of you if you hear a slurp or gulp. It's me really needing it, because if I don't, I don't think we can have this hour.
We can have this show tonight.
As productive as it normally is. You
know? I know how that goes. How your coffee thing works.
Want to welcome everybody to it. We're back here again on next week. It's like this part of the DNA now at this point.
Exactly.
It's embedded. Yeah, I think if you're like not doing it, you ask, what's going on? Something feels wrong.
Right, exactly.
And now it's official. The official time is 8:00. It's looking like by the time you all get it. Where the bill has to go now? Where it goes to now? The bill?
The Senate.
It goes to the Senate, right? It's all looking like from all documents that I read and articles that I read, it's looking like, let's get accustomed. This is how it's going to be from now. So my children will never experience daylight saving. They'll be like, they used to do that? Like, for real?
Why would they do that? Exactly.
Can't understand the concept of it back in the day.
Right.
And why it was necessary.
And then we would seem old, you know? Because it'll seem like...
Already, sorry to say.
It'll seem like an archaic kind of thing, you know? Like, why would you do that? But, you know, here we are. I'm looking forward to it because, you know, like I was telling you, I think before I had said that sometimes people got heart attacks and that kind of thing because, you know, the sudden change and missing appointments and, you know, not being sure of what time it is, you know, whatever. It was fuzzy for people. So now I guess, you know, they're going to have that sorted. So that could be good. Today, I actually wanted to talk about something interesting because... on Friday night, I had a conversation with Dr. Nelson. Dr. Claire Nelson is who you've met, but Dr. Nelson, for those who don't know, she's a futurist and she is a White House champion of change. So a futurist, she's an engineer by training and a futurist by practice. So futurists usually work within certain parameters to tell us what the future of society is going to look like based on where we are now. So they can help you design your organizations and, you know, whatever it is based on these guidelines that they have. So she's working on this project now, dealing with AI. So a couple of weeks ago, she asked me if I could write an article on artificial intelligence and emotional intelligence. Like, where do I see emotional intelligence fitting into a world where artificial intelligence is so dominant. And I have to think of it like 20 years down the line. So I said, all right, no problem. And then she called on Friday and she said, I'm doing this futures. It may be like a conference and, you know, some of this thing is coming up now. So I really need you to do the article indeed. So in doing my research for this article now, I thought, wow, these are some things that we should share because I think on the last podcast, we were saying that whatever job your children would have is not yet designed.
Correct.
You know?
As I said, I encourage them to think about something that's not been done yet.
Right.
And that is going to be a job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So now she said, you know, one of the things that's startling to her is how deep how important machine learning is. And how we are not a part of that conversation. So she wanted me to think of machine learning and figure out where we need to be as people because we are not in the conversation at all. So you'd have something, and in her explanation of it, before I started going down the rabbit hole, in her explanation of it, you have this machine that is understanding people and has to do anything that it is programmed to do. Where does the machine get the information from? So stuff would obviously have been programmed into it. But then who are the subjects that were used when they were programming these things? So she says, can you imagine if a machine now, and we're using emotional intelligence, if a machine now has to say, oh, but John doesn't look so good today. John is not performing optimal. Maybe John feels sour. So I said, well, sour is not an adjective that some of us would take kindly to if someone describes us as sour. So I said to her, and she's Jamaican, I said, can you imagine if a machine described a Jamaican person as sour? Can you imagine what would happen? And then she went down the rabbit hole with being described sour as a Jamaican, you know, and it was catastrophic. So she is saying, listen, we need to get into the rooms where people are actually choosing characteristics to design these machines. We are not in those rooms. Because in this conference that she's at now, she is the only person that looked like us. And that's a problem, because now...
Well, you can, from just now, you know that we're not in the room. Just look at Siri.
Absolutely.
Siri is a perfect example that we're not, and that has been one of the what we can speak on now, because it's functional.
Mm-hmm.
Siri has been functional and it's been improving, and mm-hmm. we too have adapted it in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us have been dependent on the whole Siri, tell me this. Mm-hmm. Siri, what's the weather?
Mm-hmm.
Siri,
yeah,
what's
yeah.
this? And we do it, that's the communication boundary alone is an mm-hmm. issue, because I struggle sometimes with trying to communicate with Siri, especially right. if you're trying to do something and you're driving.
Right.
Don't understand. Please repeat. Please
yeah.
Until they just like want to throw your phone out the window. So I don't even bother with it anymore.
Yeah. Siri doesn't understand accents. So you need to get to sort of like a middle of the ground, you know, place for her to and in our local parlance, you kind of have to yank, as we would say. For her to understand, you know, and that is because the information that was input does not relate to us.
It doesn't.
So, you know, we have to, those are things we have to look at. So I went and I did some research just to share so that we can understand where machine learning is, where it falls in the whole spectrum of things. And then, you know, we can talk about how we can improve and see how best we can get into it. So machine learning is really the use and development of computer systems that are able to learn and adapt without following explicit instructions. What was scary for Dr. Nelson is that this machine sort of thinks for itself. After you tell it a few things, after that, it's able to just go ahead and start doing things. So, you know, you could have a case of machines making decisions. You know, so she's saying when machines are deciding, what are people doing? You know, what are we supposed to be feeling, right? So in this machine learning, it still uses algorithms and statistical models to analyze and draw inferences from patterns in the data. So it sees something happening, and like a person, if you see someone running towards you, or if you're in a crowd, and you see a bunch of people running, then you're like, all right, I don't know why they're running, but I'm not going to go where they come from. I'm going to run too. So similar to that, you know, machines can make decisions based on the patterns that they're seeing. So it's trained for that. So we keep talking about algorithms. So what is an algorithm? So an algorithm is a set of instructions for solving a problem or a task, especially by a computer. So we know that and that's why, you know, we say, oh, but this phone is just monitoring my business. Yes, you're teaching the phone how to treat you, because you keep searching for specific things. And oh, but I was barely talking about whatever. Now look at my timeline. Yes, your phone probably heard the inflection in your voice, probably heard you say something more than once, you know, and like, all right, well, let me show her things about whatever, you know. Right. So that's basically how it works.
And it's years they've been trying to perfect it.
Absolutely.
I share Dr. Nelson's views in being scared. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you why. Because machines are created to function how you want it to function. It's like mm-hmm. a car, you know, and engines operate a particular way with pistons, but human beings are subject to change in the moment.
Right.
Because if we can go as basic as women and food. If you're going out with somebody and it's tested and proven, what do you want to eat? I don't know. You get to the restaurant, you order what it is eating, but you are fried. I decide I want to get some of your fries. We don't know what algorithm is there to really pick that. There's no algorithm that could really fix that. So what can happen is we can get into a situation where, because the machine is stringent, it is always correct. So it's going to do just that. But the human mind, God created it in such a way where in the spur of the moment, we could change our minds.
Of course.
And that is what makes us unique. And some people are regimental, like soldiers, like people in the Navy, and they wake up, they do this because in their mind they've been programmed. It's like the machine to wake up, do 5,000 push-ups, 10,000 sit-ups, and eat this, eat that, and hardly do they shift. But if we put human things into it, a man with all of that regimental type living couldn't fall in love or get a child. And that could shift what he normally does. So where's the algorithm for that?
Right.
So this is why I agree with Dr. Nelson that if we're not careful or we're not in the rooms, because we have to find a way where the machine needs to have like a gap.
Right.
And that gap is where it needs to stop and think, should I or shouldn't I not?
Right.
Because if it continues with the keep doing, we see all the movies that it happened, like the face. Those shows that teach you the facial recognition software that they specifically put information in there that men who look this particular way are criminals.
Yes, exactly. Men. Yes.
So, and all of us look the same. So who is to tell you can be moseying along a street and two blocks down, a black man with a beard murder two people. And me on my way to the park with my children get arrested for the murder. Because the machine
description
the machine is me. And man at length believe that, okay, we created this machine and it's 97 point whatever correct. So if it's 97.2% say you, it's you. Not giving room for that little
margin of
something
error.
That margin of error. And the margin of error the machine, human beings will tend not to take it on. But if we really pay proper attention, it can make a mistake, because men do make mistakes and we created the machine.
Of course.
That is why I believe in trying to perfect all of this, and the people who want these things functional is because they are trying to find a way to maximize on their bottom line. That's really the name of the game. It's like what's going on with the trucking industry. The trucking industry, the last story I read, when it had the big, remember it had the accident where the young man was convicted and he got a whole set of years for an accident. And then all the truckers came out and started a boycott. And then the owners of these shipping companies now are trying to find a way, because they want to push back against them. Why should you all have
to these self-driving trucks now?
Self-driving trucks I'm talking about. So now let's say these companies have this, they are going to, it's just like what Amazon does with his delivery trucks. I am more than sure these companies who will sign on this self-driving truck will have some sort of bylaw or some little clause in a fine print. If this self-driving truck is to malfunction the highway and kill 500 people, they are not liable.
Of course. Yeah.
You understand? So how is that fair?
It's an accident.
It's going to be deemed an accident. But the guy who had an accident with the people, he got 30 years to life. So you see how you have to be careful and how the thing sign up on. So I'm 110% on Doc's side in us being in these rooms to really ask the right questions, and when the testing of these things to make sure that we be devil's advocate in the room to make sure that it's really beneficial to not just black people, but to the lower tier of human society, the ones who they don't take on, because there's going to come a point where fast food restaurants are going to be going to be automotive, because it's going to be in a place where you go, you pay your money, you pull up, you get what you order, because they do it now with delivery,
and like so it's probably going to become like a big vending machine,
Correct.
So you like just go in and you press two numbers, and you know that's what you
and it creates what you the want.
Combination, yes.
The combination that you want, and yes. It come out a slot. You pay, you swipe your card, or you pay with your chip card. You come out and you pay your order. And a restaurant that would have hired, let's say 2,600 employees, might just boil it down to 600, and those 600 would be who to manually instill the things into the vending machine.
Yes, yes.
But you still need somebody to load the vending machine.
Put it, yes, absolutely. Correct.
So it's going to be that, but you're not going to need as much manpower because, you know, eliminate all of that. And over time, because you know how they look at the bottom line, it's like, all right, over 8 years, we're going to save so much of money. So let's invest this now. It's like solar power. Solar power is a great investment to put in your home. Not everybody have the startup capital, but when you look at what you'll be saving over a 15-year per time, people will tend to say, listen,
it's a no-brainer.
A no-brainer. So that's exactly how they're looking at it. But in doing that, I am seeing that humanity is running further and further away from themselves.
And I mean, there really is no argument, because when you look at when artificial intelligence started, I mean, the first part of it came out in like 1950, you know, when they were looking at the Nazis' code to end World War II, you know, and they were like, well, can machines think? And that's where it started. Then in 56, somebody coined the term artificial intelligence. There was a paper on it. Then in 1967, somebody built a Mark I perceptron, a computer based on neural network. Then in 1980, there was an algorithm that could train itself to become widely used in AI applications. Then in 1997, IBM had a machine that beat chess champion Garry Kasparov. And then in a chess match and in a rematch. So they're like, all right, this machine could think, you know. And then 2015, there was something else where someone else, the machine beat them. Then in 2016, DeepMind's AlphaGo program beat Lee Sedol, who is a world champion Go player, in a 5-game match. So it's come up, you know. And then, of course, Google purchased DeepMind. Because, you know, Google is like, can't have that happening. You know, we need to be in control of this. So they paid $400 million for that technology, you know?
Of course, and that's the technology they use now to make us get scared when we go on a browser.
Right.
So what you search on a browser comes up in all your feeds across the platform.
Everything. Right. And you could see it. I mean, because now I pay way more attention than before. So, you know, I'm careful with what I search for. So I get a lot of stuff about emotional intelligence and coaching and stuff like that because of my searches. And I understand it, you know. But if one day, like I think a couple of days ago, I was looking for, I think it was micellar water. It's some facial thing. So now I get a whole bunch of Fenty ads. So I'm like, okay.
She pays.
Right?
Bigger the company, the bigger the company. And that's what they do. When you have a big conglomerate, you pay to make sure that everybody who clicks.
Anytime it's mentioned, you get placed in front of them. Yeah.
Correct. And that's fine. I am cool with that part of it. But as individuals, as you said just now, we have to be mindful of what we search. Because let me tell you what happens. People like myself and you, we make a joke all the time going down the rabbit hole. It's scary now, that rabbit hole, you have to be very careful. Like, I found myself on air the other day. We were making jokes and we were talking about something and we started to Google it. And I say, stop. They were like, why? What we are searching here could be deemed as espionage. Because we were talking about bombs. We were talking about, we were really trying to find out some stuff was happening in Ukraine.
Right?
So we were trying to figure out, you know, how to get to Ukraine from Trinidad. I'm like, hey, next thing you know, the thing, this is terrorist worthy because the questions I'm asking, how much is a bulletproof vest?
Right.
How much is a firearm? How do I get a firearm from Miami to Ukraine?
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you can't get flagged. So you have to be careful.
You have to be.
The information that you're putting in, as innocent as might be, I was innocently just trying.
Of course.
Questions to figure out, because it was the article about this young man from Trinidad who decided he wants to go and fight for Ukraine. So people were like, why would you leave nice Trinidad? Not that we're nice, but we warm.
Right.
There's bombs falling here. Why would you leave a bomb-free, warm,
a safe space
to go to the Ukraine where it's cold and they're killing each other?
He says
he feels that is what he has to do. He has to champion the cause for his brothers and sisters in Ukraine. Yeah. Okay, bruv. So then there was a starter kit that he had to get because he had to stop in Miami and do this two-day combat
training,
and all of this other craziness. So we started asking questions, how much this thing is going to cost.
Right.
Out of Trinidad, it's costing him just under $100,000 to do all of these things he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's two-day training, firearm training, the type of training he wants to do, getting the bulletproof vest, mm-hmm. all the armor, the night goggles, night scope, helmet, mm-hmm. all of the tools he needs. So we like craziness. Right? Mm-hmm. And to even get to Ukraine was taking him days.
Yes. Yes.
You understand, from Trinidad. Yeah. So, but in going down that rabbit hole, I then had that thing click in my head like, hey, slow down, bro. Because mm-hmm. now my feed, I'm only getting bulletproof vests and I am not interested. I don't want a bulletproof vest. I don't want a night goggles. I don't want anything combat ready. I'm good. You understand? So we have to be careful.
Yes, as absolutely. Absolutely.
Into the machine.
Right. Exactly. Yep. And one of the things I highlighted here, it says, as big data continues to expand and grow, the market demand for data scientists will increase, requiring them to assist in the identification of the most relevant business questions and subsequently the data to answer them. So we need people to say, hey, when this question is asked, this is a potential answer. So if you ask, and let's think of it now in terms of things we like and so on, like as a people. So even in the region, when we're talking about food, you know, it's different in different pockets where we live. So if you ask somebody like what they want for dinner, or let's say breakfast, in some places it may be bread and butter, in some places it's bacon and waffles, in some places it's you know, whatever, it depends, rice cakes, oatmeal, whatever. So people from different places or data scientists now must have that kind of information to input. So when someone says breakfast near me, and it can find their zip code or whatever, it knows precisely what to show them, because that is what is popular in your area. That's what people in your area would want. So now we need to train people to be data scientists, to be in those rooms, you know. So, and the thing is, artificial intelligence is like the main thing. So think of it as like three concentric circles. So artificial intelligence is the big one. Then inside artificial intelligence, which artificial intelligence is actually the theory and development of computer systems. So you just brand everything as artificial intelligence. Then you have machine learning now, which gives computers the ability to learn, like I said before, without you necessarily programming it. And still a smaller subset of that is deep learning, where machine learning algorithms with brain-like logical structure of algorithms have these neural networks. So you could get even closer to a thinking machine when we start to talk about deep learning. And I find these days, deep learning is what we're hearing more of. You know, we're at machine learning, yes, but deep learning is what, you know, we're hearing a lot of. And deep learning apparently has like these three layers that it goes down, finds this information, and sort of balances it between, you know, this thinking process that it has. So what you can do really is what is called scalable machine learning. So you can teach this machine what to do. That is where the scary part comes in, because as you say, people are really going to lose their jobs because, you know, we have a machine. It doesn't take bricks. It doesn't
lose themselves.
Yeah. The machine. Mm-hmm.
Because what you're saying is that it's going to come to a point where if you can't afford it, you can pay for companionship and train it to be the type of companion you want to be. So people are very perverse.
Whoa, that's a lot, though.
We're right there.
A couple steps ahead of what I was thinking. Yeah.
I don't think we're a couple steps ahead at all, because listen to how the human mind is, right? And right. If I could think it, you know it's happening.
Right.
Because there are people who understand how certain things will look by society standards,
mm-hmm.
and they will want to, because of their financial status, will want to be outside of the status quo. Meaning, I am rich, so why should I have to, you know, operate in this kind of way? Why should I have that type of relationship? If I want a woman to do so, or vice versa, a man, I should be able to mm-hmm. have it because I can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not careful, as much as you can't say because it's a machine, you can do this and that to it because you paid for it and it's a machine and it's
right,
not real.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But then you're then sending a message to whatever generation coming after that it's okay to treat things that way.
Right.
And then
right.
people who can't afford those things will then treat the people next to them that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What you see, you know, and so it's very scary because you think about all of these, like, for instance, these men or women who operate in a space of dominance and mm-hmm. and want to rule, and if you can buy something that you can rule over, mm-hmm. they would.
Well, I'm just thinking that all the female machines would have no voice.
None.
Because essentially women talk too much already as it is, you know. So like
I'm not gonna
hear about taking out the trash. I wouldn't have to hear about no voice option, you know. So I could see how it could
it will have a voice option, but if you can teach it what you want, is what I'm saying. In that twisted mind of a narcissist who just right. wants to be dominant.
Right.
The person will continuously smile, be happy with everything he does. Mm-hmm. Remember, it's a machine that he mm-hmm. paid for, mm-hmm. that he has functioning, will do what he wants, will always cater to him, and will right. do everything because, remember, this thing doesn't sleep, it doesn't get tired, right. it none of these characteristics. So
yeah.
it can mm-hmm. go and go mm-hmm. to his mm-hmm. benefit. If he's an abusive man, if he feels to be abusive, he can, and after the abuse, she still smiles and keeps it right. pushing because yeah. she carry no bruises and stuff like this. Yeah. So it's very scary.
It is.
If we build machines like this, we will be creating some devious human beings.
Yes. Yes.
Because
I would say devious people with devious intentions would have an outlet.
Correct.
So and they can continue to perpetuate what they're
right.
doing.
Right. And I don't think it's healthy that we allow them to have it because mm-hmm. they can pay for it and create it.
Right.
Because I think it's dangerous.
They're gonna have
all kinds of, you know, these things go. It's like gun laws in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The gun mm-hmm. lobbyists and them will continue to want guns. They're not going to ever want to put it down, even right. though they know what it does and in the wrong hands and blah, 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 blah. Who cares? In their mind, mm-hmm. it's fixed. So it's going to be the same. That is going to be the same kind of legislation like that. It's going to mm-hmm. be, you cannot tell a man who's paying his money for a machine what to do the machine, what to train right. it to do, and yada, yada. You mm-hmm. understand? And then who knows if you have a comeback person who is into that and you training the machine to be an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
No, right. no, we laughing.
Right? Yeah, no.
You see things in movies. So you're training this machine to do wrong, to yes. do your wrong. Let's say, for instance, you in a bad marriage, you want out of your marriage. So you buy this machine quietly, decide house it somewhere, and train it to kill your wife. Mm-hmm. When the machine wakes up and kill your wife, you can't be arrested because you didn't kill your wife.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
a machine. So then yeah. you had to hire IT specialists to track back to see who was putting in the information, if it was you. And by the time they figure that part of the science out,
yeah.
your wife dead, you living yeah. your life. So I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful.
It could be a lot. Mm-hmm.
Going back again to Dr. Nelson in saying that we need the right people in these rooms mm-hmm. when all of these things are happening, because if we just allow it to just be as it is, all they want to do is perfect the technology.
Yes.
Nobody's there thinking about the human side of the technology. In right. their mind, if I can smile, read a bedtime story, it's human enough.
But even in our existing medical world, we still have issues where blanket treatments are being meted out to us because we don't volunteer for clinical trials, you know. So I tried to volunteer for something the other day because I felt, and then the girl asked me why I wanted to volunteer. It was for the colon thing I was trying to do, and I said to her, because you don't have a sample that is representative of people of color, so however you get a colonoscopy done, it's only measured by Caucasians, because sure. every single thing that you have on it has been a Caucasian person, you know? And so we need to volunteer for medicals. And that's a tough one now because of how we know we've been used. Yes. So like in the syphilis experiments and all of that, you know, it's a bit tough for us, but because science has come such a long way and there's accountability and whatever else now, you know, I feel like there's a little bit more transparency. And so we should be volunteering, because that's the only way what we look like on the inside is going to be measured. I just read 2 days ago on Twitter, this girl went to the dentist, and the dentist told her after doing some x-rays and had to do an extraction, he's not going to do it. He'll send her someplace else because it takes more effort to do extractions for Black people. It requires more effort. And so they were not going to do it. Their company doesn't. She posted it on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, in 2022. Wow.
Wow. That's crazy.
Know? So these stereotypes about us and why they don't give us pain medication because we have a higher threshold of pain and so on. You know, those things are the reality that people who work in the medical field still have to deal with. So the way to get sort of balanced and to bring us more in touch with the reality on the ground is to have us in those rooms. We need to volunteer. We need to get in there and have our voices heard. There really only is one way. Really only is one way. Yeah. So it's not just with machines. I mean, right now we still have some of the issues. Yeah. And I wanted to just touch on some of the artificial intelligence applications that we currently have. We deal with them, and perhaps we don't even think of them as artificial intelligence, but you already mentioned the speech recognition one with Siri. So, and Siri is just the Apple one, but there's Alexa. And there are a couple others, because there's Hey Google, all these things. And, you know, these things incorporate speech recognition into their systems, and you can do voice searches. So you say, hey, Alexa, play whatever. And Alexa searches for it and plays it. Same thing with Siri. Customer service, which is one that, you know, we get very aggravated about, because when you call, it's always press one for this, hold for that. And they try to help you all the way before they pass you on to somebody else, you know, and you have to just keep saying representative, or pressing zero until you actually get a human being to talk to. But, you know, on e-commerce sites, and then you get virtual agents. Today, I was actually trying to find, I was looking at shipping, cross-country shipping, and I wanted to figure out the cost for something. But I know that if I input my phone number and email address between now and when I'm ready for stuff to be shipped, I will get a zillion emails. So this bot is asking me all the questions. I put in everything. So then I say to the bot, not interested in being spammed. Can you just give me the information? And I guess it probably didn't, it was probably looking for like an @Gmail or whatever before it would continue. And then it says, okay, I'll pass you on to, I think it was Matt now. So then this person comes on and says, hey, how can I help? So I said, as in the chat before, this is what I want. And he says, oh, well, I can't give it to you without an email address. I said, okay, I will come back to do this when I am ready for it, you know? And, but that was a virtual assistant. So obviously a machine that is trained to provide like basic information, because some people may have been happy with just going ahead and doing whatever, and it would just generate the information, because it's not complicated. You didn't need a person to tell me what the weight is. It's done by mileage, and that's it, you know, but that's just how that goes. Then there's computer vision. So where you can search for stuff using images, and it allows computers to derive meaningful information from digital images and videos. One of the ones that I really like is being able to try on glasses without actually being there. Sit and try on.
Tested and proven. That one is amazing.
Yes, exactly.
Those cool parts of the technology, I'm all for.
Right.
Little things like that, that's innocent but productive.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't take much. It's just being innovative and clever, and as you say, it's like helping your business grow even faster and get more customers. I'm all for that, because you still need someone to physically make the glasses.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What you're doing is gathering more customers and more data quicker than you can if somebody had to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, because you're gonna get people who still gonna walk in. Because mm-hmm. they're going to feel that old school touch.
Yes,
is like, it's like produce online.
Mm-hmm.
As much as in the pandemic, ordering food became super popular and a lot of people indulged.
Yeah.
They're the old school type of people like myself who would not buy produce
mm-hmm.
online, because mm-hmm. you want that feeling of going to the market and touching where it is you want to buy. So there's certain things, but anything canned box, like, for instance, the bigger stores like the BJ's and for you guys mm-hmm. and the Walmarts and so on, It's easy to order like the basic things that you would need, like washing detergent, stuff for the home. It's easy. But this glasses, that piece of software there, it's amazing. When they see they get that to close, it's going to be crazy. When you can,
but there are there are some already, because they, I'm trying to remember which site. There's something Stage. There's a something Stage. Stage is in the name. They allow you to try on clothes virtually. Yeah,
yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, you can do. That's amazing. So it is clothes already. But I think people, especially women, I think we like the thing of going into a store or whatever, you know, and trying on a dozen things, and you know, you really only need one, and then you leave with like six, and then how did this happen? I think we like that. I think we like it.
I guess that's part of the whole. That's part of the whole thing. That's why retail stores, when they were threatened that they thought that they would park up, they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Some did, but there's some retail stores that will last, I think, forever because of what you just said.
People enjoy
the time out.
Yes.
Social interaction. The store and get something.
And sometimes just knowing, because, you know, sometimes you gain weight or you lost weight or whatever, and because you haven't shopped in a while, you may not know how something is going to fit. So that process of having to wait 3-4 days for it to get to you, and then try it on and then send it back if it doesn't fit, you know, we still like that immediacy of things. We are in the microwave generation. We want to know immediately if this works, you know, so
immediately anything. Black people, I don't know, I can speak for black men in the Caribbean. When we spend a dollar, we want $150 back one time. So whatever I spend that dollar on, I want it now. That's just how we think. It's like we have this term, we call it new Negro, right? Where you go to a store, you walk into the store, like let's say for instance, we go to buy shoes. You walk out of the store with the shoes you just bought.
Oh, you mean you put it on? You
put it on one time. And that is something, just as you say, as women like to go and shop and try it on or whatever. Men, well, at least in my generation, that was a cool thing to do. You go to a store to buy a shoe, you walk out with the shoes.
Okay.
You understand? And that in itself is, you know,
an interesting phenomenon. Then another form of artificial intelligence that we use now is recommendation engines. So it using past consumption behavior data, algorithms can help discover data trends that can be used to develop more effective cross-selling strategies. And this is used to make relevant add-on recommendations to customers using the checkout process for online retailers. So one place that does that already is Amazon. So when you buy something at Amazon, it tells you other people who bought your item also bought these other 10 things. And so you go down now looking at these things. Well, what else can I do? And it comes up with everything, whether you buy a book or, you know, whatever it is you buy, it gives you, it just combines, it bundles stuff. So it's not just Geico who's trying to bundle, or not just Flo from wherever Flo is from, where's Flo from? That insurance agency. She's always bundling home and auto and whatever. Yeah. It's not just there. You know, they actually put stuff together, and it's useful if people don't know what they're looking for. So think of instances where, like, someone is a do-it-yourselfer and they have a home repair job and they know, oh my goodness, I need this white paint for this wall. And so they decide to buy the white paints online. And when they're ready to check out, then it says, oh, well, people who bought the white paint also bought rollers, brushes, tape, maybe gloves, you know, whatever. And then you start to think, oh my goodness, well, I didn't know that all these things would be necessary for just this white paint. You know, so it really becomes, it's useful in that sense, but it keeps the retailer in business because it's now suggesting 10 other things to go with white paint when all you really needed was white paint. And imagine that that information, because of past data, is built in to every single product that you could possibly buy online. So if you're not strong enough, you know, you can end up always being influenced. So think of it like impulse buying, you know. So when they put the chocolates right next to the cashier, you know, you get in there and you're like, oh yeah, no, I really do need this chocolate. No, you don't.
It's like I learned that when I was a younger guy, you know, coming out in when I was like in secondary school, used to take these summer jobs, and I had this friend whose dad was a retailer for Nestle. And that's the first time. Well, I give you a story. That's Ricky, my homeboy Ricky. His father owned Rodriguez, a supermarket. So he used to do a lot of those things. So I remember when he was teaching us that same trick you're talking about. That's where I learned that the bigger the brand, they put it at eye level.
Right. Yes.
Lower the brand, they put it on their knee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and I can never understand this because the human mind is like how you hear that elevator music, right? And mall music. They play certain songs in a mall.
Right.
Which triggers the sense for
spending.
You to
spend.
Spending sense. So what they do in the supermarkets is that they put these on the eye because they know everybody's busy, especially working class women. You don't have time. You don't want to really go there to be searching for nothing.
Right.
So they put the things that you want, but at the high end.
Right
brand,
there. Yes.
Right there. So if you're looking for nuts, there's a nut lower down to cost a dollar, you know, but you will pay $10 for your nuts because it's right there. You want nuts because that's not what you want.
Right.
So you're buying the brand of nuts that's $10, but there's one at the bottom for a dollar. But you don't have time for that because you're pushing your cart and you're moseying along.
Yeah.
And, that's what, and then they play these same tones in the supermarket for you to want to shop and feel good and all of that sort of good stuff. So yeah, you're correct. You know, but I remember when I learned it the first time, I was like in shock. I was like, wow, that's a thing. And the people who study that, the people
of
who
course.
Study the pack of supermarket,
of
the
course.
People who study different things. Like,
merchandising is a science.
It's a science. Like,
it
when you
enter science,
places like Walmart, where they lay the stuff out, everything is a science. Everything is a science.
And when you walk into a supermarket, you generally tend to go to your right. So they place things at the beginning, you know, and you would pick up as you go and so on. But because for me, because I worked in distribution, I understand how it works. Also, because I am usually intrigued by stuff like that. So if I go to buy, let's say, tea, I would look at the stuff that's at eye level, but I would look at everything to make sure I'm a good label reader. So it may not necessarily work on me, but, you know, if I make a decision, it probably is. Yeah, I've worked through the 10 options you've given me, despite what you've placed at eye level.
Right.
But then we also have to remember that while they would like you to pick the most expensive thing, they're budget conscious shoppers. So people would look and say, oh my, this one is, you know, $10. Oh, no. Let's see what else there is.
And they normally put those right under.
Right. Yes.
They put the bag and stuff for the 2-for-1s right underneath the expensive stuff. So they give you and those two are also triggered in a way where they are priced funny, where you're paying for the two at the original cost of the two, but they're making
it looks like it's bundled. Yes.
All right. So all that is part of the science. So it's a science in every aspect. You have to be a real, for the people who go to the supermarket and save, are the ones who either, and you see it mostly in women, like single mothers, find the deals. Single mothers who, as you say, who has a good grasp on time management.
Right.
You see people, women who have a good grasp on time management always win because they know, okay, this is how my week is going to run. They plan their week. And on Thursday, I'm going to go to the supermarket, so I have 3 hours geared to that. But the reason they do it that way is because they know in that 3 hours time, they're going to save a couple $100.
Of course. And they may be clipping coupons. They may be, here, people may be clipping coupons.
As opposed to a working class single mom who's just on the go, she has to drop somebody to some kind of outing, a basketball practice, a dance recital, a piano. So she just needs to move. So she's going to go there. She knows these are the things the house wants. What the children need, cereal, milk, juice, blah, 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 blah. This goes on. So she's going to run through that supermarket, whoosh, wash, and come out spending $500. But on Thursday, the one who studies time management is going to spend $125 and get the same items.
Exactly.
The structured her
day to suit it. Yep.
So this is where we're going back now to artificial intelligence. This is where they're going to try to trick you. They're going to try and create algorithms and apps to tell you don't need to do that. We got you.
Exactly. Just like the fridge with the glass door. And when the fridge, you can tap the light, it comes on and something is not in there. And you can check a box. So it makes a list for you of the things that you're out of, you know.
Right.
Or it because you put inventory into the fridge system, when you get to a certain threshold, it will tell you, hey, two boxes of whatever left, you know. Right. So there's it starts option. To make a list for you. Sure. Yeah. And
but you're paying for the fridge.
You are.
You understand?
Yeah,
so this
of course.
This is where the trade-off is. So they try to tell you that we are going to make your life easier, but they are at a cost. And is the cost really worth it?
Right.
At the end of the day, is the cost really worth it? Because you have to remember, everything that costs money and operates like that eventually needs servicing. It's like we all jump on the electric car bandwagon. It's going to save us so much and so much, hundreds and thousands of dollars in gas in 10 years. But then when the computer system is down or there is nowhere to plug in or anything like that, although they're saying they're putting ports everywhere and yada, 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 you have to understand the cost that you're paying. You understand? So this is where you have to kind of balance it out. And I still think that these things are geared towards a particular group of people.
Demographic.
A particular demographic, because if you're being honest, the regular man cannot buy an electronic car.
Well, you know, funny enough, you're saying that now, and in my thinking process now, the stage that I'm at, I actually considered, should I get an electronic car? But then I need to look to see if there's going to be a place to charge it, or else I would still be paying $5 a gallon for gas, and, you know, I would have an electric car for no good reason. You know, and while I was talking to Dr. Nelson as well, she said she's working with a guy who is pioneering a car that runs on water. I'm like, wow, a hydro-powered car. Wow. So he has some unit that's going to be placed into the car, and on, let's call it a charge, on a single charge, it could go 1,000 miles. So he was supposed to have whatever it is ready for her, because she said she wanted to do like a cross-country trip this summer. And she would help him test it, you know, so it would be a week and, you know, they would do whatever, because he's prototyping it now. Wow. But a car that runs on water with these gas prices sounds amazing.
It sounds amazing, but he also has to be careful, because it also sounds like it's hampering into somebody else's business that's already functional. So if it's a black man making a water-driven car, he need to understand, get the pattern, try and license it, and just rock back home and just enjoy whatever pay they
let
give you.
Somebody else,
you trying to run it yourself, they're going to find all sorts of ways to sabotage that. Because how dare you?
Right.
After I spent all of this money to create electronics and get the world on my side, because the world is finally undecided electronics.
Absolutely.
If we be in the third world countries, we cannot even think about it at that level. I've been on it.
Yeah,
but it's in small pockets, as you just said. The ports are very small. There's no ports on the road. So it's basically home to where you're going.
Yes. Yes.
You have to. So people who are buying it here have to measure where they live, to where they work,
to where they go,
and home, because that's all they're going to get. You can't you can't take no long trips for the day and and go sightseeing, because there ain't no place here to charge. Right. And that's how it's going to work here. But in the bigger, in the first world nations, I think it makes a lot of sense once they can get the mileage up.
Yes.
Mileage. Once you can get it to go a good enough distance and charge, I think it's going to make sense. Because if we're being fair, as much as they, in the more developed cities, like you go LA, New York, these places, you're seeing it popping up everywhere. You see the gas stations with the little pump. But when you start to go in the rural, you're like, so we're going cross country. You want to drive from New York and say you want to go North Carolina. I think you're going to need a gas car. Because somewhere along the way, you're going to shut down.
Yeah. And so it's not as efficient for situations like that. But then there are other times when you might be able to save something. But then, of course, one of the issues with electric cars, apparently, is the cost of repairs for Tesla anyway. Yeah. And so now you find a lot more companies putting research into hybrid models. So there are a couple of cars that are now hybrid.
Most cars are hybrid now. They do
have them more and more. You've seen them more and more. So that's interesting.
The higher end European vehicles like the Mercedes Benz and all of those, they're now going fully electric, because they understand. And again, people who could afford a fully electric Mercedes truck, you have to understand where their bracket of their salary bracket is. So it's kind of, it's like a no-brainer. It's like, okay, let me buy this, because if I'm living LA, I can drive around LA and not put gas at all.
Right.
So if it goes wrong, I can more than afford to fix it, because if I can buy it, and that's how you have to kind of balance it out. So what they do is that supreme, there's a term for it in economics, I can't remember it now, but I call it the supreme model. Why I say that is Supreme is a brand that a guy created to put on other brands. So he basically said,
endorses.
He endorsed that this is the Supreme version of this Louis Vuitton. So if it normally goes for $1,000, when I put my Supreme stick on it, it is now $5. So I think that the electronic version of those cars is Supreme. You already spend so much money for a Mercedes-Benz truck, a G-Wagon. You want the electronic version of a G-Wagon? I mean, you have bread. So you buy that version to show, one, the level of your pocket, and two, you could afford it, so you don't really need to think about the repairs. And that's how I look at things. That's how us in the third world nations look at European cars too. People who buy it can think about repairs. It's because you could afford it. They didn't think about insurance. Why take out a full, why nobody in Trinidad who has a Bentley or anything up on iron, like a Maybach, has fully comprehensive insurance? It makes no sense, because you're not going to get parts. They're not going to cover it. You have to get somebody to second insure it. So you might as well just take third party. If you bounce, you fix. If it crashes, you buy the parts that you need to fix it, because you should be able to afford it. If you can buy a G-Wagon for $2 million and bring it here, and you can't afford to fix a light, something wrong. So you need to know that you can spend your money.
No, it's actually quite interesting, but we need to really now start understanding how this is going to affect what our society would look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and then when your children are adults, you know? Because it's going to look a lot different from what it looks like now if we just continue to allow the people that are making these decisions to make those decisions. Because as you're saying, we are not involved in the spend. So everything is automated and, you know, it has grown by leaps and bounds, but we're not in that purchasing bracket. We didn't decide that this was going to happen. It's happened to us. So, you know, we're sort of in a victim mentality where a lot of this is concerned, you know,
and I just want to throw this in to add something that the pandemic caused, and I'm seeing it, and we're going to feel it a couple of years from now. I had a beautiful conversation with the vice president of the Trinidad and Tobago Olympic Committee last week, and she was explaining to me how crucial it is that children get back out in sports. She was saying, because between that age of 8 to 14, the crucial time in a child's life who is developing to be a professional athlete on whatever level, right?
Okay.
And they would not have been doing anything in 2 years. So you'd be 2 years behind. So she said, in over the next 7 to 10 years, you're going to feel that in athletics.
Okay.
Because you're going to see a lot of fallouts, because a lot of people would have outgrown their sport. Like right now, for Carista, you had to be 23 and under, and everybody now is over the age. So they can't longer go
so
there.
So they missed that window,
They missed that window. So to go to compete at a different window is harder. That's one aspect, right? Then I started to talk about even education. How much children are left behind over the past 2 years. And then we're talking about simple things, like I experience it all the time now with Miliana. Children at her age do not want to write.
Yeah, because they come on clicking though.
Right. So we're talking about a fountain pen, which is already a prehistoric gift as it is.
It is.
It is already. So you can imagine 10 years from now, you're just talking about what our children when they are adults. You can imagine Miliana, 25. A pen is going to be a Walkman.
Right.
Let's be honest. A pen is going to be just what a Walkman is to them. Like, what is a pen? Who is going to actually lift their hand to use it? Because we all sign electronically. I can't tell you the last time I actually signed my, other than when we were doing book signing. And what we did, we took a couple of books and we signed it that one day and we left it alone. And in all honesty, even if you talk about international book signings like Michelle Obama, I ain't signing all them book. So one signature, that a printing company is going to just press 2-3 million copies of it with a signature.
Right.
You will get an original signature from a first copy if he has a reading.
Yes, exactly.
Bring 100 books to that reading. and you're fortunate enough to be one of those 100 people, you might get an official Michelle Obama or Barack Obama signature. But really and truly, on the wider scale of things, you're not going to. So that's what I'm saying. So artificial intelligence is here. We know it's here. It's not going anywhere. But as Doc said, we know, Dr. Nelson, we need to fight to get in the rooms as fast as possible so that we can safeguard our children in the next 15 years. Because if we're not part of the conversation, artificial intelligence is going to get to a point where we are not even going to be part of it.
Right.
We'll have no choice but to use it.
Right.
Because
cases, there'll be a lot of trepidation because we don't know and we start to get frustrated when Siri doesn't understand what we say. You know, like you say, you're ready to throw your phone out the window, you know. But there's going to be a lot more of that because the group that will deal with this is wide right now. See, like, you think of it as a base, you know, so that group is wide. The people who are designing it are at the top of the triangle. And they're making whatever devices for the rest of the triangle, especially the base. Because usually, you know, when you're making things like that, because now where artificial intelligence is going, it's for mass consumption. It's not necessarily for the Teslas of this world.
No, it's
and
not.
Tesla, too, is actually sort of coming down the triangle because they need capital. So they need more people to be consuming their products so they continue to make these elite products.
And they also, remember, they went through that whole testing stage. It took them a while.
Yes,
but they
were
fortunate. They were fortunate because of the other side. Gas prices kept going up. The more gas prices go up, the better for them.
Yes.
So they're going to continuously play in that pond of white jacket, black jacket. It's like, okay, if we could fund some espionage over there so that it could make the gas prices continue to go up, let's do that because we're going to be we're going to benefit on this side. Right. Let's be real. That's just how that game is played. And you can't be upset. Like I tell people all the time, the moral compass is gone when money comes involved in it. Some people forget that compass. It's broken. And for those who have already broken their moral compass for the mighty dollar, you cannot be upset with them when they're doing whatever is necessary to keep their bottom line.
Right.
Because at the end of the game, that's the name of the game in business. Business 101 is nobody enters a business. You can't go to business school to learn to lose.
Right.
Who pays to go to Yale Business School to lose? Right. You go in there to get a degree to win. And to win means your bottom line needs to always look a particular way. So if it is like, no, took up the paper this morning, one of the major phone companies in Trinidad and Tobago, this end of this quarter, they're sending home 572 employees. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
You understand?
Can you imagine homes where that person is the breadwinner?
Exactly. So just think about 575 breadwinners. Just you have to look at it that way. And they are not going to get any psychological counseling. We know that for sure.
Right, right.
It's not because at that capacity, at that level, they don't have anybody here for that quantity. It's not 10 people going home.
Right, right, right.
This is 575 families you have to talk to. We don't have the volume. That's one. Two, where are they going to work?
Right. Right.
Some of them jobs are going to become, I'm sure it's going to be, is dormant because they've been doing it for the past 25 years and the job really wasn't really a job. So their resume has not been tweaked in the past 25 years. Wow. So where are they going to do now?
These are the things. It's a lot. It's a lot.
And they are doing that again, the company, because they're trying to secure again their bottom line. That's their job. And whoever is the CEO and the people who send there to make sure that the numbers make sense, that's what they're going there to do. So this is a harsh reality that we're all facing everywhere in the world. So the questions that Dr. Nelson is asking is good, is great. We have to figure out a way to get into the room. So when it starts to happen, we can have some
sense of
security. Some sense of security. That's all we're trying to fight for at this point is a sense of security, because it's going to get to the point where we can have the selfish way of thinking, which I know a lot of West Indian politicians think. They think in a world of, well, I'm not going to be here, so what happened when I go on that? I'm telling you, they don't say it out loud.
Right, but we know they
operate,
think.
Operate, you know, that's how they think.
Yeah, absolutely.
They think in a place of, I set up enough for my children.
Yes.
I can
yes. Do. Yes. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we're coming to that time to close off.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I think this was fruitful. I mean, it has given me a lot more things to think about, you know, when I sit to write on the future of emotional intelligence and artificial intelligence. And we definitely need to be in the room. So until next week, you guys have a fantastic and productive week, and we will be back.
Yes, next week. So everybody have a good one. See you guys back here next week, Sunday.
Bye.